You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we are heard online. Today, our show will be with two call-in guests. We don't have anybody in the studio today, which is kind of good because we all had a busy week.
We did. We really did.
We kind of need the studio space for the three of us. So Ellen Little, Ellen O'Neill is here.
That's very good. Thank you.
I caught myself.
You did.
I'm so sleepy from the weekend. Ellen O'Neill is here. Yes. And we have Allie Tambor. I said that correctly.
You did.
And myself, Samantha, is going to be working on social media for us. And Ellen, our friends who are tuning in, our listeners can also hear our show today on?
That's right, on 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button and hear us live right here each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510wwbc.com. Or after the show, we post all of our information on Facebook, which is our Viewpoint with Sita and Friends page, Sita Media Inc., and also SitaMediaInc.com is our website. We have those on there as well. So all of our shows, last 12 years worth, two guests a week, figure that out.
Yes.
Times 12 years, that's a lot of people.
You're making us do math.
I know. Well, somebody's got a pen out there, I'm sure, somewhere.
Our brains are more into all the stuff going on around in the country.
That's right.
So our first guest, he is a repeat guest. His name is Clifton Michener, and he's calling in to Mitchum, and he is calling in to speak about solar and saving money, environmental choices that people make when they try to go with a solar roof, any type of energy generated by the sun. He's going to speak to us about his role with the company and how people can contact his Swift company to talk about maybe putting in a new roof or whatever it is.
Yeah, so if there's anything that you want to hear online, if you have any questions, you can text us at our Viewpoint with Sita and Friends page on Facebook. Or if you know Sita or I's phone number, you can certainly text us a phone number here. I've had a lot of friends, Sita, that have been interested in solar panels for their roof and what the market value is and certainly what the market value of their home is after they get such solar panels. So,
and it helps. It does help.
Well, and you know, in the age of where we're trying to save money, where gas is so high and we have, our utilities are getting higher, so forth and so on, it's really important that we look at these types of things. And unfortunately, solar panels, even though a lot of folks have them, they're still not widely used. So we'll find out from Clifford today of
how to get in touch.
How more people can get their questions answered.
Right. And so a little bit about Clifford. He graduated from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University with a degree in aerospace engineering, moved from the aviation industry into renewable energy to work with the Solar Bear, a company that had streamlined the process of going solar. Clifford works and helps home to install rooftop solar in all over Florida.
John DaVinci.
And he is going to be talking with us about the company that he works for, which is he's an independent energy advisor with Crew, SWFLSolar.com. And we're going to have him tell us all about what that stands for. So, Mr. Clifford T. Mitchum, you're on the phone. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Good day, Sita. It's a pleasure being here. I'm glad I could join you all today.
So did you have to pull off the road or to call in, or are you in your hotel room?
I pulled off the road.
I kind of figured you would. Well, you're on our first segment, and our second segment, before we jump into the interview with you, we have a woman who's calling in from New York. Her name is Marianne Bartow, and she's calling in to speak about her book, The Hill and Trying Times. It's one of her first novels, And it's she's done some research about her family, and hers is a family story. So we'll be talking to her in a little bit. So before we jump to her, let's talk to Cliff. So tell us, bring us up to speed on what's, tell us first, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then bring us up to speed about what your company is doing.
Well, a bit about me is I've been a solar representative for since late 2015, and I first got into this mix because the utilities attempted to take over the solar industry via constitutional amendment, and that activism work led me into, we were successful in pushing them back, that led me into helping more homeowners find out which was the best company to use, how the process went, and the best way to go about getting solar power. So from there, I had my own company, which is Crew, and we actually do marketing and client acquisition for installation companies. And we've linked up with one of the major installation companies in the state of Florida that's actually nationally recognized, but it's focused its work just in Florida. And that's provided the best opportunity and the best way the homeowners can streamline the process of going solar and affordably. So most recently, we actually just won another attack on solar power through what was legislation that actually passed the House and passed the Senate. And then only through the veto of the governor was it able to maintain the solar industry itself.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow. I mean, you got to give people credit for when they do something good. And I think this was great for your industry and for solar power.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, solar itself just makes sense. We are in the Sunshine State, but it's really abysmal how little solar we actually use as a state. And had that passed, it would have destroyed the industry itself.
Yeah, I mean, I know you and I had touched a little bit about that, and I think at that point, a lot of people were happy that the governor did veto that, and I think it was a great thing that he did that. That was the net metering bill is what that was called. So talk to us about the 18% rate of your people's bills when they get the FPL bill. They're not paying attention, and there is such an increase for whether you're using your pool or your hot water at home or any kind of hot water that you're using in your home.
Right. Well, all that hot water has to be heated by electricity for the most part, because Florida as a state doesn't have a well-developed natural gas pipeline for homes and residential uses. So a lot of that's used by electricity. Now, that electricity is actually going up. FPL, being the largest provider of electricity in the state, actually just finished raising rates 24%. They're raising rates currently 18%, which is 6% a year for the next 3 years. Now, when you look at that 6% increase, do the math on your electric bill. It's a fun exercise. Take the amount of power you used for this month. Take that bill you paid, divide it by that number of kilowatt hours. Look at your previous bill from last year at the same time. Divide the amount you paid by the number of kilowatt hours. And what you'll see is that 6% increase that they had over the rate actually equates, and what I've seen in my experience, anywhere from a 14 to 23% increase in your monthly bill. What that's truly saying is that when they raise rates 6%, it can go up as much as 2 to 3 times what that number actually is. So your bill for heating water, for heating your pool, for having your lights on, having your television,
taking a shower, most important, turning that shower on every morning. We all know sometimes you have to wait a little bit too for the hot water to get upstairs.
Exactly. So all that's going up tremendously. Now, we also combine that with the amount of inflation we have. I mean, you have the amount of change in your monthly expenses being, you know, whether I'm going to eat a meal today or not. It's pretty amazing.
Right. And you know what? People are not educated enough to understand that both residential and commercial rooftop solar power can be installed. They have to take advantage of it. What do we have, like 300 days of sunlight in Florida every year?
That's correct. 300 days of solar. That's viable. Now, on the day that it's not viable, the solar still works. It's just not as effectively. So that's really 365 days that we can get power. It's just a matter of 300 are optimum. Now, the biggest thing I see with people is that they're used to paying the electric bill, and they've gotten so used to it that solar looks too good to be true.
It's a habit. It's a habit, I think. You know, it's a habitual thing. You get your bill every month, and people get used to it. But they need to kind of come out of their comfort zone and call you, call somebody with your company, and speak to you and educate themselves about what's happening out there. Because just the ability to heat a pool with solar energy, people could enjoy their pool year-round versus only in the summer months.
Absolutely.
Well, and not have to take out a loan.
Solar pool heaters are, you know, they're tremendous. Just to make sure we can maintain the lifestyle that we have. I was actually meeting with a friend of mine over the weekend, and he likes to keep his pool at a balmy 85 degrees. So with the electric pool heater that he has, he can dial it directly into the comfort level that he wants and keep it there. If somebody really wants to have a giant hot tub, they want to put their pool to 95 or 100 degrees, they can do that same thing to make sure the pool is exactly where they want it. And when you don't have to worry about the electricity coming from a fossil fuel polluting source, I mean, it makes your comfort level increase just from your capabilities.
So talk to our listeners a little bit about what you do and how they can network with you through all the different companies you work with or all the different clients you work with.
Yes. So you can reach me through my website, crewfwflsolar.com, or on social media at FWFLSolar, which stands for CREW, is Clean Renewable Energy Worldwide Southwest Florida Solar. So we make the process simple, easy, and understandable. So by reaching out to us, we sit down for a no-cost consultation, and most solar companies will sit down with you with no charge and explain the details of it. The thing that makes it more difficult is that there are so many solar companies, it's difficult to choose which is the right one and which is the right one for you as a homeowner. So now, always check review sites. That's probably the best way that people can determine whether somebody is a viable company or not. There's a website called solarreviews.com. And on Solar Reviews, it has most every solar installation company in the state available. You can see their organic reviews, because companies can't advertise or do anything specific that's going to influence their views, or excuse me, their rankings, other than just telling people to go to that site and check them out. Now, people that have solar, they can go there and put their honest opinion of the companies that are available. Companies that have a good reputation should be close to a 5-star, I would be risky to say as low as 4.8, but 4.9 would be the ideal, and make sure the company has many reviews. There's several companies out there that say they've been installing solar for only a few years, but only have 3 or 4 reviews. That doesn't sound like a viable company, in my humble opinion. So make sure the company's established, has that good ranking, has the reviews. Read the negatives, but also read the positives, because although people are positive, it tells you the experience and how that homeowner feels about working with that company, because who somebody works with is important, because it's a long-term relationship.
Right. I was just going to say, I like that you guys don't come knocking on people's door and try to pressure people to buy the solar panels or harness the energy from solar energy, because I will say I've had people that left material on my gate.
Flyers,
and for some, I mean, something inside of you says, you know what? I don't want to be pressured. And I know, and it's all about trust, right? Because you sit down with people or someone from your company that normally people will meet at an event, or maybe they heard from a trusted friend, but people just don't want you coming up to them and harassing them, you know?
Right. Unsolicited.
Absolutely.
Right. So, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, there's many companies that will go out and do the door knocking. Not everyone is bad, but not everyone is good. Never settle for pressure. Anybody that's trying to pressure you, by all means, go to the next company. I mean, there are incentives. Companies do incentivize people for making a decision today. But if you do not feel comfortable, and the person feels shady, something doesn't feel right, you don't fully understand, this is too big of a decision to just take lightly. So by all means, make sure you feel comfortable with who you're sitting down with.
Right. I mean, it's like a 30-year commitment.
Once you, 25 years.
25 to 30.
The system will operate generally for 30 years.
Yeah.
The financing terms on the long end are 25, but people can choose shorter. I do recommend going for the 25 because that makes sure it stays as close to your current electricity bill on average as possible.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about the savings for the homeowner. We touched a little bit earlier about people looking at their bill. But what are the long and short-term savings for a homeowner if they decide to sit down with you and go for it and put solar panels on?
Right. Well, for the short term, the savings are not immense. And I'll tell that right off the bat because the utility companies in Florida have done a great job keeping utility rates relatively low. We look at it on a national scale, Florida's among the lowest when it comes to their rates. So that means that a homeowner that chooses solar, they're cost to do solar and their cost to do the electric company isn't that far off. There's times I sit with homeowners where they're saving $50. There's times I sit down with homeowners where it costs them an extra $10. But the main thing is the short-term savings can be there. It's largely determined by the shape of a roof and the way a home is faced. Now, when you get to the long-term, that's where you're truly seeing big-time savings. Because the utility rates are continually going up. When you're talking about a 14% increase that goes up this year, it's going to go up 14% next year, and then 14% again the year after that. Locking in your utility rate today by saying yes to solar makes complete sense. And then the longer somebody has their solar, the more that their savings is going to be compared to had they stayed with the electric company. Which also brings the point of, since it is a long-term agreement, it's not something that a homeowner is locked into if they were to move or sell their home. If somebody moves, the number one thing that people do is add whatever the balance of their investment in solar is to the sale value of their home. That way the new homeowner moves into a home that their electricity is pretty much paid off, where there's no further investment. Or they can pick up wherever somebody's at monthly with their investment. And that way, they're getting whatever year that homeowner got their solar in at that rate over the rest of the term.
Yeah, I actually know somebody who just, I actually know someone who just bought a home with solar panels, and she told me that her electric bill was like $25 for the month. And
right.
I was like,
and that $25 is just the customer charge.
That's right.
Because you can't disconnect from the grid in Florida, but that means 100% of her power is coming from solar power. And that means it's 100% renewable because for every 1,000 kilowatt hours of electricity that's generated, it equates to about 1 million cubic feet of natural gas. And that natural gas, that savings means that doesn't have to be explored, mined, transported, or burned. So it's a big help to the environment and our flora and fauna that we have in the Sunshine State of Florida.
Right. Well, what she decided to do, since she was paying over $200 in her old home, was she's just going to put that towards her children's college plan. So, I mean,
absolutely,
there is that saving, right? So now what incentives is your company offering as far as tax credits? And for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Clifford Mitchum, and he's an independent energy advisor with CrewSouthwestSolar.com. So what he said, yeah, go ahead and tell our listeners what the SWFL stand for again.
Oh, that's focused on Southwest Florida because that's the primary area of Florida that I work in. But I can actually take care of people all over the state of Florida. So wherever you're at, I can help you get your home running on sunshine.
Oh, great.
Now,
ooh,
that's an
ad right there for you. We should see you on Facebook or TV with that ad. Yeah. So I know you have some tax credits because I've been reading up about it. So tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yes, currently there is a 26% tax credit for anybody that goes solar. So that means 26% of the value of their system they get as a tax credit. Now, it's a credit, not a rebate, so it's not like they get a check back, but that credit then goes on to their taxes, and they have up to 20 years to use that full credit. And depending on what their tax situation is going to determine how effectively or how quickly they can use that. So now, it gets a little bit different because everybody's tax situation is different when you look at it from an individual standpoint. But for many homeowners, it gives them about $5,000 to as much as $20,000 of tax credits that they don't have to pay to Uncle Sam and that they can use to invest in their home. Now, as a company, we actually provide a big incentive for nonprofits. So now, anybody that, like for your example, for your show, anybody that says that they've gone solar, and they do it with me, and we actually get solar on their roof. We're going to make a donation of $1,000 to the program or the nonprofit that connects us.
Well, Ellen's going to get busy with that. So you know what? We all hear about the equipment for the solar, right? So how does the solar panel system actually work? Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends how they actually work, how the equipment works.
Right. So there's four major components of a solar installation. The first one being the solar panels. The next one being the microinverters. And those are what convert the DC electricity from the solar to AC. And that's because AC is what runs everything in the house. You have the communication device that's going to communicate between the solar installation and the app to let you know how the performance is doing. And then you finally have the racking system. That's what holds it to the roof to make sure it can withstand 165-plus mile-per-hour winds, which is a Category 5 hurricane. Basically, if your panels get torn off your roof, the whole roof was going anyway. So now, when it comes to those components, and I find a lot of homeowners tend to get caught up in the minutiae of the different companies and the different systems available, but that's actually not as important to the installation and the performance as the company that does the installation for the homeowner. It's good to have quality equipment that you know is going to work. It's key. But if the company that's actually doing the installation goes under or does improper business and doesn't maintain the system, then that puts somebody with quality equipment in a bad spot, because any other maintenance or service that equipment may need in the future becomes an out-of-pocket expense.
That's
Clifford,
right.
Clifford, that brings up a thought on how durable are the solar panels. What's the average life expectancy of a solar panel? What kind of repair work or maintenance is the homeowner expected to manage?
Right. Well, when it comes to maintenance, solar panels should be cleaned once a year, depending on what kind of debris and pollen and dirt you have around your area. Sometimes it'd be less, sometimes it may need more. But largely it's recommended one time a year, because any dirt or accumulation that becomes on your panels, that gets on your panels, is blocking light. And if it's blocking light, it's lowering performance. So that's not a huge expense, generally about $300 to $500 annually that somebody would need to do for that. But the thing outside of that is solar panels themselves don't have moving parts. So there's not a lot of maintenance issue to go with it. Generally, if something does happen, it's a failure in the wiring or something electronic that's within the panel. And that's something that the manufacturer maintains a warranty. The average warranty on a solar panel is 25 years. The companies I work with have a 30-year warranty for the performance of the panel. The physical life of a panel is designed to work for 30 years. And the financing terms are generally about 25 years. So the panel should be warranted for that whole time. It's just a matter of if the installation company themselves warrants their workmanship to take care of the labor to address any switch out for a panel that may cause some sort of failure or have a defect.
Right. So the different panels, of course, would be priced differently as well. It depends on the company you go with as well?
Correct. Newer companies may be less expensive, but their life expectancy isn't proven. They may be in the lab, say they can go 25 years, but in the field end up a shorter lifespan than that.
Wow.
So it's always important to know who's installing it and do they stand by their work.
I suppose it's like everything else in life, right? You get what you pay for, right? So let's transition a little bit, Cliff. I wanted to talk a little bit about Governor DeSantis and his action. What does his action by vetoing the bill actually mean for the solar industry?
It actually gives life to the solar industry and protects it. Had that bill gone through, it would have cut the net metering, which is a large portion of how people maintain the savings of their system. During the cooler months of the year, the system runs backwards, and you actually get credits for each hour that it runs backwards. And then when we get to the hotter times, you're going to use those credits to pay your bill instead of having a charge from the electric company. Had that bill passed, it would have reduced the amount of credits going forward. So you run your meter back 1 hour, but you only get 15 minutes of credit to run forwards. So it would have been a 75% reduction in the net metering for a system.
Well, considering we're watching, you know, consumers, American people, all of us worried about gas prices and the prices of food, I guess that was a little bit of a victory that he vetoed that bill, because that money goes right back into the taxpayers' money, into their pocket.
Right.
Correct. So that way the utilities aren't taking it from homeowners and they can maintain it. They had a graduated system that made it, air quotes, less painful, but in the end, it would have been devastating to the solar industry because it just would not have made economic sense to go solar.
Yeah, and you know, there were some people that had said at that time that they had, the people who supported that bill had said that they argued that it would unfairly push the utility cost to the non-solar customers. And a lot of critics had said that the bill would effectively kill the residential solar industry in Florida. Do you have an opinion on that at all?
Well, in my scientific words, I'll say that's hogwash.
Okay. That's a good scientific word.
Yeah, we like that.
Well,
yeah,
it's a word people can understand, and I'm glad you're saying it like that. Go ahead.
Exactly. Solar homeowners make up 0.86% of the ratepayers from FPL. So you're asking people to believe that 0.86% is going to cause an increase for electricity rates? It's just nonsensical.
Right.
So
right.
The solar homeowners actually save money because when they go solar, that's less fuel, that's less fossil fuels that have to be generated for those homes. Now, there was a study called the Value of Solar Study that was done several years ago that found that when homeowners go solar, it actually saves their neighbors about 17%. So it's pretty tremendous and, you know, farcical, the idea that for somebody, saving somebody on fossil fuels is going to cost their neighbor more. It's just nonsense.
So what is your selling point when people say to you, well, I just don't like the way the solar panels look on my home? Because a lot of people would say, I understand we're harnessing the energy from the sun. I understand it's free. I understand I could heat my water and cool my pool and whatever. But I just don't like the way it looks. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that before.
I have. And when it comes down to aesthetics, it comes down to function over form. What do you want it to do? Are you more interested in looking good, or are you actually interested in having money in your pocket?
That's right.
Not a lot of people actually look at their roofs. Many people's homes are on an angle where they can't even see their roof.
That's right. So, and after a while, you get used to it anyways, right? So we have one more question for you before we go off air. So first, I'd like you to give us your website and your phone number as an independent agent. If somebody wants to call you and speak with you and set up an appointment, give us your phone number and your website. And then just explain to our listeners how important it is to choose the company that you think will do the best job for you.
Absolutely. My website is crewswflsolar.com, and my phone number is 239-218-1354. And you can also reach out to me on social media at SWFLSolar. Now, it's vitally important to know what company that somebody is choosing to work with. Like I recommended, solarreviews.com is a tremendous resource to look at reviews. Google is a great resource to look at reviews. Investigate the company that's going to be doing the work for you. This is a 20-plus year relationship that you're going to have, so make sure you're doing with somebody that you know is going to be there into the future. I can tell you a horror story of a woman that got solar in January. By August, her installation company had gone out of business. All right, it's just tremendous to know that you're working with somebody that's reputable, that's somebody that has a good experience, and that you can trust the reviews of other people out in the internet. Don't look in one source. Look across the spectrum of sources. The Better Business Bureau, Solar Reviews, Google, Yelp, whatever it is, check them out and see that the numbers correlate between those, because there are sites where some companies could pay for something, but they're generally not going to be able to pay for it to happen across the board. So look at multiple areas. And I do recommend talking to multiple companies. You know, I'm confident enough in when I sit down with a homeowner that I can provide them with the best package from the best company and make it the best financial decision for them, despite homeowners that get undercut by other companies. Because just because somebody can save you 10 grand today or something or other over the value of the system doesn't mean that company is going to have enough to make sure they're a company that lasts into the future. So highly recommend doing the research and talking to multiple companies, and that way you can go ahead and make a good, strong comparison.
Well, my dear friend Cliff, all I could say is, Clifford T. Mitchum, we enjoyed speaking with you, and you do make us think about a long-term vision. An investment in solar is more than a one-time, lifetime experience. You make us and our listeners understand that you have to know and like and trust, and also you have to believe in what you're buying, the product. So thank you so much for taking the time to call in, and I think Ellen wants to say a couple of words to you before your segment ends, and I appreciate you being my friend and taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
It's fantastic.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I love coming on your show.
Thanks for stopping by and making sure that you educate us on solar panels, and for folks to have the opportunity to call you is fantastic. But we're going to listen to our sponsors real quick on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency room. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. My friend Ellen O'Neill is here and Ali Tambor is here, and we're having a really good time. After such a busy weekend, I feel like I'm resting.
I know.
I ended up going to the Caribbean Festival, you know, then I ended up with the big old Hawaiian luau at Kimmy's house, and I went to the Hindu temple. Then I worked out, then I went to another event, and I'm like, gee, my poor car and the gas, it's probably saying, lady, take a break there, you know?
Exactly. Hopefully they fed you well.
They did. Too much. Yes. I'm on a strict diet now.
Oh, dear. Particularly
after
Hawaiian food.
It was a lot. So our second segment, as you ladies know, is with Marianne Bartow. And Marianne is calling in from... Marianne, you know what? Your bio is quite extensive, and I know you're calling in from New York. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about where you're calling in from and a little bit about yourself.
I'm calling in from a little town. It's called Shavey, New York, which is up in the Adirondack region. And I live basically out in farm country.
Beautiful up there.
As for myself, I have my professional day job is in human services. I work for the county in the health department. Was working with people to make their homes safer, and that is something that I have always done for way over 30 years. My secret passion, though, for quite a while was becoming a writer, and I always loved books. Growing up, I was a bookworm in a library, reading all these wonderful books and just, like, escaping to all these different worlds with just, you know, pulling a book off a shelf and, you know, cracking it open and starting to read. I could go anywhere I wanted to.
Right. And your family, you have a family that I have to say is kind of historical. And that enhanced why you wanted to write books, because you've had a lot of stories. So tell us a little bit about your first book and, you know, the feeling that you actually accomplished writing your first book.
Well, I felt very accomplished. I felt like I was telling the story from, you know, hearing it from my ancestors who actually was there. This is a fictional book, but the part that kind of hit me the most, I think, was, I mean, back in the 80s, there was a couple that decided to write a book, and it was called The Legend of the Bushwhacker Basket, and it was so far from what really happened, but based on our family. And then I would just thought back to all these wonderful stories, and the one thing that really stuck in my mind, because my grandparents and five generations before them lived in a place called The Hill, and they pretty much stayed away from everybody, and fulfilled their indentured servitude from the 1700s. And then finally they started to get out world, and what brought them into the world was the fact that they were basket makers, and the baskets ended up getting to be found by some, like, fruit farmers and like that there, and that's what brought them out into the world. And but a lot of people always speculated about the people from the Hill. You know, were they witches, were they gypsies, what were they hiding from? Nobody ever really knew, so there was always a lot of speculation. So
and it sounds like it was like a mystery, too, because I feel like I would like to be one of the people from the Hill.
And it was a mystery. They kept their secret because, you know, they never fulfilled their servitude. And my grandfather started to venture out more and more. But the interesting piece out of all that there, and I have all that in the book, is the part that my grandfather bought my grandmother to marry her in 1913. And the book revolves around that there. And I pieced some stuff together from stories. Some of it is just my imagination, and basically how they met. And my grandparents always said to one another, you saved me. And then the other one would always say, no, you saved me.
Oh.
So this particular book was my grandfather saving my grandmother. There was a lot of secretive stuff going on. Back then, there was no law. There was no state troopers. I mean, you might have a local law official, or like in the city, like the city of Hudson, you would have the police. But there really wasn't any law enforcement. So people could pretty much do whatever they wanted to do, however they wanted to do it. If anything, people would do a thing which was called homespun laws. Like if somebody did something wrong, they would come up with something like a punishment and punish the people to fit what they did wrong.
So Marianne, did it feel like was it a religious sect? Not really, but just their community had their own laws?
But that was throughout the whole county, actually. Ah. That wasn't just the hill. That was everywhere. So, but no, as for like people buying one another, there was a thing called farming out, where if people couldn't take care of their kids or if they needed food, they would literally give their child to a farmer or someplace else.
And what was it called?
Farming out.
Really?
Farming out.
Yeah.
I've heard that phrase. We farmed out that bit of work.
Well, I mean, I've heard of people saying that, but it'll be like, I just gave the child away. I put them out to work on a farm. So essentially what they were doing, they were farming them out.
Child,
So when you wrote this book, did you have a lot of pushback from any family members for talking about family secrets and what went on the hill?
No, I have not actually. I have actually gotten more information from some family, friends, as I said, stories that I heard growing up. Some of it I just pieced together. It is a fictional story in a sense, but it's inspired. It's inspired by the family stories. It's inspired by that area. It's inspired by how things were handled back in that time, in that area, in that little town of West Taconic, New York.
Wow. So, I mean, usually when people write a book, they feel like a weight is lifted off their shoulders, right? They're like, oh, if I've been thinking about this forever and I finally did it. How did you feel after you wrote the book?
I did. I felt like as I'm writing it and I'm getting ready to send it out to the world, I feel like you're going to get a personal view of like people of how they dealt with things back then. It isn't about like something that's totally fictional about like an axe murderer in every town back at the turn of the century. I'm trying to take you to these characters to get a feel of what these people went through and how life was for them. It was a completely different world back then.
Yeah.
Compared.
So what made you choose to write the book under a different name?
Actually, the name, that's my maiden name.
My maiden name.
Nice. Proper. Yeah. I know it's spelled like proper, but it's proper. And actually, the original spelling is P-R-O-P-P-E-R-T, which is German for winemakers, which my ancestors were, too.
Yeah. Well, you know what the good thing is, you know, in today's world, with so many people speaking about the banning of books, it's so interesting to have an author that comes up and say, no, I want to go back in history. I want you to know what happened to my grandfather and my grandmother and the people on the hill and how they lived and how they passed it on to you and everybody else in the family. Because I like you, I think reading takes you away to a different place, a different time. It opens up your mind. And I think everybody should have that feeling of freedom when they read a book and they can imagine.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's
float
such a
away with it.
Yeah, you're just like you're on a hammock and you're just floating. So you're self-publishing. Of course, I self-publish my book as well, but why did you choose that route?
I chose that route because of I could control how the story was told. That's one of the things about it, but also too, I wanted to feel the whole process of writing. Writing is not just writing a book. Writing is finding a cover, somebody to do the cover. It's a formatter. It's going through the different types of editing. It's choosing, I mean, you know, how to table, how to promote your book. It's all that, and I love it all. I want to just know the when I do something, I got to know it all. I've got to know the whole process.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like it's like being involved, right? And Ellen, my co-host is here, and she's written books as well. And the lady who just asked you the question is our friend Allie Tambor. She's a friend of Ellen's and mine's, and so we're all, you know, very interested in hearing more about your book and the story of the basket maker's daughter. Where can someone find your book right now if they wanted to buy one? Is it already up for sale?
It is not up for sale yet. I had a bit of a formatting issue. I'm going back through that there. I am going to send it off to the printer and everything, hopefully within like the next 3 weeks. And then I will put up basically on my Facebook page, Marianne Bardo Author. I'll put a link to the website, and then you can click on, you could buy the book that way. I'm also going to have a calendar of events. I'll start booking tabling events and stuff, and that will be the first two ways, the two venues. I'm getting it formatted, too, as an ebook as well.
I'm so proud of you. So does writing energize you or exhaust you at this point?
Yes, probably
both. Energize.
Energize?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got your grandmother in you, girl. You got some. So I want to hear more about your grandmother. And now, so tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, you wanted to be involved in this entire process with writing your book. But I'm sure while doing that, you've had the conversations in your mind that you had with your grandma or your mom. Were there any conversations that stood out with you that you take with you forever, and you say, this is what I learned from these women that came before me?
Oh, there's so much. I mean, my mother was a logger back in the 1960s, and then she started after she had me, being a single mom in the 1960s. She started making baskets again, and then the baskets got around, just word of mouth. And I mean, literally, she sold baskets to, I think, everybody in every state. She literally took a piece of plywood, painted it white, and put on the sign, handmade baskets for sale. And she put the sign up before the paint was even dry because she was in need for money to sell these baskets in order to put food on the table. And just watching her endurance with doing that there, putting that up, and just getting, you know, like just doing the basic stuff for us to order for us to survive. And then things, as time went on, more and more people, you know, got realized about the baskets, and just watching her being a completely self-sufficient businesswoman without even realizing, in a sense, what a businesswoman was. She was not a businesswoman, say, like you or me. It was just completely different. She did what she did, and it just amazes me. She went through so much.
Ellen, what kind of businesswoman was she? What kind of, what would you say? Because she's saying that she was not an everyday businesswoman where somebody goes to a class and get a degree and comes out and has a website and has, you know, a Facebook page and they have flyers. Her grandmother literally took the wood, made the basket before the paint was even dry. I mean, her mom, baskets for sale.
Like farm to table.
Well, it's and it's also like a musician that writes their own songs but can't sing them. You know, doesn't go out and sing them, doesn't go out and perform them and do them.
But they're creative.
But yet they're creative and they find their, you know,
juices,
their build, if you will, behind the scenes.
Yes. And so
that's what I do. I find all my build behind the scenes. That's why I let you do all the talking.
Yeah.
That's how our little partnership works.
Yeah. No, but you're awesome. You have actually inspired me and so many people to go out and take their talent and gift and ability and do something. And I mean, and that in itself is an education. It's like education 101. If you believe in yourself, you do it.
That's right.
And that's what you did for me. And I think what she's saying is,
Marianne,
you're doing it because your grandmother, who was, what's that word she said? That she was bought in?
Yes, farmed in.
Your grandmother came and then your mother came, a single mom. And back then in the 60s, that was pretty rough for a woman to be single and be business oriented to a point where she could take the talent from her grandmother and do this. So what kind of baskets, besides the wood, did they make baskets from any other material?
Nope, it was all just wood. And to be honest with you, my mother got a lot of grief for making baskets because only the men were supposed to make baskets.
Wow.
I never heard of such a thing.
No.
So my mom, here's one little story. My mom created a company called Diet Control. She was very into physical fitness and very into women just being healthy about their bodies. And she was sued by the woman who created Weight Watchers because they were both creating their companies at the same time. And my mom won. So Weight Watchers had to become Weight Watchers because she was trying to use a name that my mother had come up with. Oh. But it was all private, all hush-hush, you know, barely knew about it until my mom told me about it years later as a woman in business. But again, as a woman in business in the 60s, you didn't have the support and the necessarily the community support
the resources,
either.
Yeah.
The resources to be able to do the things. So
that's right.
For Marianne and for her grandmother and her mother who've done all of those things, you're a league of...
The leaders.
Really. Yeah. Of women's movements without even really knowing it.
That's right. Yeah. That's what it was. So, Marianne, what was the hardest part of the writing process for you, and why was it that, whatever you're going to tell us, was the hardest part?
Finding somebody to do the cover, because if I said to you, picture a cat right now, or picture a basket, or picture anything, it's not going to be nowhere near probably the same thing of what I'm picturing. And being able to convey that to somebody who does covers, I mean, don't get me wrong, I have a very amazing cover artist out there, and finally after a while we got on the same page. But no matter who I worked with, that was probably the hardest part. I mean, the writing, the formatting, the editing, it's all with the words on the page. The picture, though, that's one of the first things that people are going to see and is going to draw them in. And that's got to be basically your magnet to sell your book in one aspect. So that was the hardest, but I love doing it still.
So, Marianne, are you working on anything else? You got other stuff in the back of your head that you've scribbled some stuff down for?
I'm working, actually, I've got a draft that's going through editing another book series. It's called Izzy Becker and the Vaudevillians in Disguise, and that's completely fictional from my head. I used to have a writing coach until he passed away. Matter of fact, it was Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And he helped me with a lot of this stuff, too, actually, with just the basics of, you know, okay, you want to know every aspect of being a writer, this is it. Because he did, like, 7-8 books. And he was my writing coach, and he was my life coach, and he did a lot for me before he passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry he passed away. And I know, so do you view writing as a kind of a spiritual process at this point?
Yes, I do. I do. And as I said, it opens up other worlds. I'm literally, in a sense, when any of us do a book, we're creating a world. We're creating something that we want people to envision, to see on the page, so to speak. And it uses, in a sense, in your imagination, you use every sense, you know, rather it's sight, sound, taste, feel. I mean, it's just, and you know, no two people who read it, it's going to be the same. It's going to be a completely different experience for every single person.
I can't wait for all the books to come where people are going to write about COVID-19 and what happened to them for 2 years. Because I'm sure there are women who are going to be writing books about domestic violence, and people are going to be writing books about their issues with technology and issues with their children being at home. And I think there's going to be a lot of books coming up, don't you think, Marianne? Because a lot of people went through a lot for the last 2 years.
They went through a lot in the last 2 years, and also, too, I think you're going to see a lot of other books, too, where people have always wanted to sit down and do something, and literally, you had time on your hands during all this. So I think you're going to see a lot of different things, a lot of different aspects, but definitely, I think, yes, a lot with the domestic violence from working in the health field and just being a contact tracer. Yes, definitely the domestic violence and a lot of other things, too, just surviving COVID.
I know. And how they... That's the name of a book right there, Surviving COVID. So when you wrote your book, a lot of us have certain periods in our life. Like, I know I think that I had it so hard as a teenager at home, or a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old. But now I grew up and I'm like, geez, some people have it much more difficult than I ever did, right? So what period of your life would you say was the happiest for you that you probably incorporated into this book?
I'm not there with myself, but just the stories of like my mother talking about how she used to walk up to the trail where the hill used to be. Stuff along those lines there, like just envisioning like that, what that was like for her when she was younger and being able to do that. That has since overgrown. It's a forest now. It doesn't exist anymore. But just imagining and envisioning that when I was growing up and just the unknown of that inspired, it tickled my curiosity, let's say that. Anything that's unknown or just some like little hint of history in general. But it all started with the stories that my mother and my uncles would tell me and my cousins would tell me about, because I was the youngest out of everybody, would tell me about. And I never realized, and I would listen to the stories and I was like, oh, not this story again.
Yeah. It's like the one where people say, oh, I walked in the snow bare feet to get to school.
Uphill.
And oh, I would say, oh, back in Trinidad, we walked 3 miles in the hot blazing sun bare feet to get to a school. And we were so grateful to have a school. And the kids would be like, not again, please. We don't want to hear about your sore foot and the water and the sun. So we have 1 minute left. So tell our listeners one more time what name you're writing the book under, the name of the book, and of course, we will promote you when the time comes. But just give us the name of your book and the author name.
It's called A Story from a Basket Maker's Daughter, The Hill. And I did it under my pen name, which is Marianne Proper, which is really my maiden name. But my Facebook page is under my current name, Marianne Bardo, author. So yeah, like my page, you know, if you got any questions, send me a message through Messenger. Yeah.
So would you say the book has a little bit of drama, love story, mystery, intrigue, characters that we're going to fall in love with? You've got all those things in the book?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we were looking out for it.
Okay.
All right. And Ellen's going to take it away from there. Oh, my God.
Marianne,
nice,
thank you so much for sharing all of this information and things about your family and all kinds of great things. We love shows like this. Unscripted, fun, educational.
Like historical.
And something historical. Exactly right.
Much less whet our appetite.
There you go. So you can tune in each and every Monday here, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're on 1510 WWBC. You can also put that in as your website to listen to us live, 94.7 FM, 99.9, and 100.7 FM. And once again, Sita, another fantastic show. Folks, mm-hmm. We'll see you next week.
I want to go to the hill now.
I know, right? Exactly. The hill's the place. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks. We'll see you next week.
Yes.